Everyone, another episode of Mercury Talks today, advanced hydrogen, of course. So we have with us Jonas Moberg. He's the CEO of Global Green Hydrogen Organization. And of course, as the name suggests, he will discuss with us about green hydrogen and how far are we from a green hydrogen world. Jonas, it's a pleasure to have you.
Many thanks for having me, Marius.
So let's start from the beginning. Just give us the role of the Green Hydrogen Organization, please.
Thank you. We are a small not-profit foundation that works to for the accelerated production and use of large-scale renewables, green hydrogen.
And it's I've seen you work with globally. We've seen that you have you are involved in Africa, in Asia as well. So, what is your role in these regions?
Very much globally, maybe there is a slight tilt towards, in particular, emerging markets and developing countries. Excuse me, making sure that we do whatever we can to see the rapid accelerated production and use of large renewables and the green hydrogen, green ammonia economy in these countries. And that's partly about the enabling policy environment, working with governments and others to make sure that laws, rules, regulation are appropriate for this industry to take off in a responsible way. Quite a lot of the work is also in parallel to that on the finance side, because we, of course, need huge amounts of capital. This is, as we all know, a very capital intensive industry.
Indeed.
And we will need a lot of various forms of blended, concessionary, mixed finance arrangements for these very large projects. So, how multilateral banks like the World Bank can if you like, catalyze private institutional investors is also a key part of the agenda.
Who are the biggest financiers of this kind of projects? Is it only global organizations, or do you have also?
I think that initially it's a lot about large developers, and some of them, of course, have already done a lot of big renewable projects. Some come out of the oil and gas industry. And I think we're starting to see also other forms of institutional investors slowly coming on board.
Okay. You mentioned also the oil and gas. Is oil and gas willing to invest in this, or are they... or there is some kind of a hesitation to change course?
Yeah, no, I think they're absolutely willing to invest. And we're seeing clear examples of that in Africa and many other places. That said, it is, of course, for them a slight challenge that their rate of return on oil and gas investments are still higher than the are on renewables and the green hydrogen economy. And that, of course, means that it's difficult sometimes to do these things within the same companies. Though I think this is starting to change, and we're likely to see their interest grow in the coming years.
What are the biggest challenges you see when it comes to developing? I understand for developed countries, it will be happening much faster than developing. But I'm sure, or maybe I believe, that all of them have the same challenges. So what are those challenges to develop a green hydrogen?
Yeah. Marius, firstly, I'm not sure actually that it's going to happen faster in OECD countries. There is one country where this is happening faster than just about anywhere else, and that is in China.
Okay.
I'm sure many of your listeners know that nearly half of renewable energy investment in
yes.
the world is happening in China alone. They added 239 gigawatt of wind and solar capacity last year, which was more than double of what they added installed in 2022. That tells you something about the scale and about the trajectory there. There are some other emerging markets where we see huge developments. Recently in India, extraordinary big projects coming on stream very, very quickly.
Okay.
So, we do see it happening fast in some of those emerging markets. Then
are we talking about green hydrogen, Jonas? Is it for...
I only talk about green hydrogen.
Okay.
And on that note, let me be clear. Our aim is not green hydrogen. It is low carbon. So if you can do other forms of hydrogen well, good luck, and we will welcome it. We have no issue with that. We have no issue with blue hydrogen if it is done well. And companies like BP have said what that is. It has to have a capture rate of 95% or thereabout and low methane leakage. The problem is that most of the blue that we're seeing at the moment does not have that, but has quite significant leakage and relatively low carbon capture rates.
Okay.
And we want to have renewable energy, green hydrogen and green ammonia, being able to have a chance to compete. And that's why it's important to be very clear about this.
Okay.
Now, so, if we come back, Marius, yes, to your question about challenges. So
I'm sure that a lot,
I think it depends a little bit in which market we're talking. If we start in OECD countries, I think that one big challenge is planning and permitting. It takes time to get these big projects approved in many of our countries. That is a big challenge. We are also, of course, seeing a number of incentive schemes, contracts for difference, the tax credits under the Inflation Reduction Act in the US, and many others to give, in a way, to help address the green premium, the price delta, the difference between low carbon fuels and carbon intensive fuels. And it takes time to put those schemes in place. We're seeing delays with the implementation of the IRA. We're seeing different schemes coming forward in the US, in Europe. So that gives market uncertainty, which is also taking time. Yeah. And then, of course, let's not underestimate what we're talking about here. Very, very big, tens of billions of dollars projects. It takes time to complete FEED studies and everything else that needs to be done, environmental and social impact assessments and so on. So if you're going to do it properly, it takes time. So that is a key challenge in those markets.
Does it take more time than other mega projects, mega energy projects?
Say that again.
Does it take more time to get approved all this, the process than other mega projects, like other energy projects?
Not necessarily, but any big industrial projects takes time, in particular in OECD countries. Then it's also true that some, of course, takes longer than others. And if we're talking about things like ammonia, it is a product that needs to be handled carefully, that of course can result in longer approval times.
Go straight to commerciality of hydrogen. Of course, many countries need it to make their heavy industry greener. Other needed to export it. Other needed to have a zero carbon society. So, is it commercial? And of course, when will it be commercial to go on a large scale?
Well, that depends largely. I mean, we're seeing that costs are falling very rapidly. It also depends, of course, on carbon pricing and things like that. Fossil fuels are in many economies subsidized quite extensively. Mm-hmm. So if you were to take away those subsidies, it would be that it would be cost competitive much faster if carbon emissions would be charged for appropriately. Again, then almost overnight, low carbon fuels such as green hydrogen and green ammonia would be cost competitive almost overnight. So there are many variables at play here. What we can say also, Marius, is that if you look at the contracts that have been agreed, you can see that green steel is starting to take off. And what that tells you is that there are end customers in buying steel that are prepared to pay a relatively high premium for a low carbon product compared to others. So that's very positive. What we are now looking at closely is some of the other markets, such as fertilizers and for example ammonia for shipping. And here we have a little bit further to go to see a general cost competitive situation. That means that we see firm offtakes being placed.
Which other industries can eventually use hydrogen? Maybe cement or any other of those heavy polluting industries?
Yeah, I think we're going to see it being used with cement as well. Quite how the carbon management when it comes to cement, I don't think we quite know yet. Yes, it will be used also in a number of somewhat smaller industries where you're working with very high temperatures, we need to replace what's often used today, meaning gas primarily, where it is relatively difficult to use electricity for those very high temperatures.
So I suppose all this will need quite considerable capital, but we don't see the investment flowing in. From what we know, it's only 10% of the projects reach the investment stage. So what will it take to increase investments?
I think that there are often some figures banded about saying that they're not reaching. I'm not quite sure that's true. In any industry, in any sector, there are always a lot more projects around than those actually reaching maturity and being acted on. And also, again, it takes time between a project is announced and tens of billions have been raised and a financial investment decision and execution begins. So, and we are in that process. What will it take? I think that one thing that is very important is that our markets are clear about that they want genuinely low carbon fuels. It sounds simple, but my point, I come back to what I said earlier, to some extent, green hydrogen is competing not with good blue, meaning blue with high capture rate, but it's competing with blue with relatively low capture rates and with quite significant methane leakages, which are not being reported. And that is a difficult competition for renewable hydrogen. So I think certainty on the buyer side of that it's genuinely low carbon fuels that they're after, that will help a great deal to unlock some of those orders. And once those orders are in place, we're likely to see more projects get underway, reach financial investment decision and being built.
Well, will the 4 billion allocated means will they help making investors gain confidence in this?
Oh, absolutely. I think there are really important partly to just make the numbers work for early projects, but again, also to make sure that confidence in the market is there, and that it's from that perspective, I think it those schemes have an important role in terms of capitalizing some big projects, not just the projects that they will benefit, those funds will benefit, but those funds will have an impact well beyond those projects.
Okay. So you, as an organization, you work globally. So which regions would you mention that they're doing impressive progress here when it comes to green hydrogen?
Well, I've already spoken a little bit about the extraordinary developments in China. I've also spoken a little bit about India. Seen many projects there. Adani, for example, are well advanced of producing 1 million tons of green ammonia by 2027 and 1 million tons of green hydrogen by 2030. These are very big numbers, and it's just one company of a number of companies in India making progress. I think we see a lot of developments in the Middle East. We are seeing huge and rapid progress in countries like India and Morocco and Mauritania, to give some examples. And then here in Europe, there are, of course, also a number of projects. They may not be that big in comparison to the use that we will need here, but there are some very important projects nevertheless. And then, of course, in the US, while I said that things may not be quite as straightforward under the Inflation Reduction Act as had been hoped, it is, of course, also a very large economy where a number of big projects are now moving ahead.
The US is also focusing on naturally occurring hydrogen. Is that correct? Will other regions be able to explore natural hydrogen somehow?
I'm sure if it's available in one place, it's probably available in many others. But I think we should also be a little bit careful here. This is not proven technology. We don't know that we can scale it up. Just because there are sort of reasonable ways of comparing it to the shale gas revolution in the US over the last 10 years or so, I don't think that necessarily speaks to that. It's means that it's likely that we will very soon see a large hydrogen production through those technologies.
But that would be an ideal scenario, huh? Instead of building wind farms and solar parks, would be ideal to find it on the ground, right?
It would be great, but you know there are many things that are available around us, but that we don't manage to bring together sufficiently to make it work. So let's by all means pursue all technologies and be open-minded and hope that research and applied use technologies are you know is rapid. But I think we should also be a little bit cautious here.
Let's also start a bit on Africa, which unexpectedly, I would say that we have a lot of movement, especially in the countries of the alliance, the six countries that you also have projects with, as I've seen. So what do you have to say about this alliance and the prospect of producing green hydrogen and for their own reasons?
Yeah, well, of course, it's hugely exciting. And we did a study a couple of years ago now with a UN agency and McKinsey that came up with mind-blowing numbers in terms of jobs that can be created. I think 4 million in Africa by 2050 if the large scale renewable energy and green hydrogen economy took off there. So the potential, and you know, think about it. If we could harness the wind that blows and the sun that shines across the Sahara and many other places, use that energy locally, and also manipulate it, if you like, and use it elsewhere through vectors like hydrogen and ammonia. Think about the opportunities in that. This alliance, it's called the Africa Green Hydrogen Alliance, and it's a group of governments. It's now it has grown a bit, but founders are Egypt, Morocco, Mauritania, Namibia, South Africa, and Kenya, they are collaborating amongst them, trying to learn as fast as possible how to best host this industry. So, what are good examples of contracts, of fiscal regimes, terms and conditions? How do you mitigate some of the environmental issues that also comes with renewable energy and the green hydrogen economy? So, for example, learn about water use, because of course, if you do electrolysis, your raw material is in a sense water. You split water to oxygen and hydrogen. So water use is a hugely important topic, and there are many others. I think that what you're seeing is these governments are learning very fast from each other, building practice in terms of what the responsible hosting of this industry actually looks like.
Will it necessarily mean more investment into these countries in order to catch up when it comes to infrastructure and technology? It wouldn't change the plans anyway.
Sorry, Marius, I struggled to hear you.
That does it mean that developing green hydrogen for these countries, if they lack the infrastructure or if they lack the technology, will that be a backstep for them?
Well, it's an important topic, and it's of course really crucial that we look at making sure that we create jobs domestically and not just for export. I think that the technology is being shared quite rapidly across the world. So I'm not sure we are particularly worried about that is only going to exist in certain markets.
Okay.
And of course, one of hydrogen's biggest challenges might be a blessing for Africa in that hydrogen, unless you have pipelines, of course, is hard and expensive to transport. That means that there is a strong logic to make use of it to refine products, whether it's steel or fertilizers, whatever it is, where you produce this hydrogen. So we need to take that as a given, as granted, and make sure that it means that we build these important industrial clusters using the hydrogen in these African countries.
Excellent. Perfect. Jonas, your final vision, will we ever see a green hydrogen world? Will it take large scale, we're talking now? Will we ever take fossil fuels? And what's your vision on this?
Marius, I'm not saying that it's going to be straightforward, but frankly, we don't have an alternative. We know that we need to reduce the carbon emissions in the world very quickly. We know that two-thirds, so they're about three-quarters even, come from the use of fossil fuels. That has to go. The good news is that today, and this is relatively new, only the last couple of years, we know more or less how to get there. We know that we need to have a renewable grid. We know that we should use batteries a lot. And when it comes to many of the hard-to-abate sectors, ships crossing oceans, fertilizers, steel, aviation, and a couple of other things. We know that we can solve those issues with hydrogen and its derivatives. So I'm absolutely confident that we will see a large renewable green hydrogen economy grow in the next decade.
Jonas, pleasure to have you today. Our audience will definitely enjoy your insights and hope to see you again soon.
Thank you very much, Marius.